You're listening to episode 46 of IDRA Class Notes.
Kids are intellectuals. Kids like ideas. They like patterns. They like interesting things if presented in an interesting way. But so this idea of when I need help on something, when I don't understand something, how comfortable do I feel in having a voice in my classroom? It signals something very, very deep about the presence or the lack of a true learning relationship in this classroom, for which I don't think the broader education community really even has the words to characterize. Like, what does it mean to analyze the classroom in terms of a learning relationship?
Welcome to the IDRA's Class Notes podcast. I'm Aurelio Montemayor. In this podcast series, we explore issues facing education today and strategies for teachers and administrators to better serve all students. We'd love to hear your comments about this show. There'll be details at the end of this podcast on how to contact us. It's idra.org with a three W's in front. If you like our show, please tell us and tell three others and leave a review for us on iTunes. That helps others find us. We've set up an email alert to let you know when a new episode of Class Notes is available. If you're not subscribing to this podcast, our email alerts can help you stay up to date. Just go to our website to sign up. And also don't forget to sign up for our free monthly Graduation for All electronic newsletter. Again, you can sign up for this at our website. Our topic for today is broadening the conversation with parents about mathematics. With us is Jack Diekman. Jack was with us at IDRA before, and he was director of the Excels project. I'll say more about it later. Jack is presently enrolled in the Curriculum and Teacher Education Doctoral Program at Stanford and just diving into his dissertation. His focus is math education under the direction of Dr. Linda Darling Hammond. While at IDRA, he directed a project that helped secondary teachers improve their instruction of English language learners. And because of his math background, he gave a very special focus himself working with math teachers at the middle school and high school level. And so today, it's a continuing conversation. Jack, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Glad you're here. You and I have been having a long-term conversation about families, math, and the connection between those families and math. And of course, I have a special concern for families that are either poor, recent immigrant, don't speak English, and how schools see parents and how parents see schools. So starting off, what is a basic notion that you have right now in terms of that connection?
Well, I come from mathematics education and professional development, and that conversation, the people who work in those areas tend to think of the teaching of mathematics as a technical endeavor. And I think the work at IDRA and the work that I've continued doing in my own research continually reaffirms the shared responsibility and the shared contributions that parents make, that teachers make, that the community at large makes in support of what is probably one of the most effective determinants of students' economic success long term. One of the reasons that that's the case is because mathematics has always been, you know, historically, has always been associated with economics. If you think about in ancient times, the people who could predict the lunar cycles for the harvest, those were the most important people to the king or to the person in charge, because that had to do with making money or losing money. So technical knowledge, specialized knowledge, mathematics included, science as well, have always had sort of a high status in society. And because of that, then how all students do, especially those who are from non-dominant communities, how they do on those markers is incredibly important.
So mathematics is central. You know, the context we work in, and you mentioned IDRA's approach, we have a quality schools action framework. And then within that framework, we say fair funding is important, governance efficacy. But the school system indicators we look at, and the very first one in that series, is parent involvement and community engagement. How do you see this engagement happening? Because you said technical knowledge. Right now, it's very common that you hear professional learning community or community of practice. but it usually means what us math teachers talking about math or curriculum. You're saying this is something broader. What is it that you're saying about that engagement?
Well, one of the things that distinguishes community of practice or learning community from other kinds of collections of people is that a community tends to be able to identify very clearly who are its members and who are not its members, so where the boundaries are. And as such, when you add professional to that, the professional learning community, the word profession becomes the criteria by which someone is a member or not. So by definition, parents are not members of the professional learning community.
So the only way a parent could be a member is if that person is a math teacher, for example.
Correct.
Yes.
And so right away, just the whole setup of what you call, if a whole school district has professional learning communities as its central model, its central engine, mm-hmm. it's already inherently limited because you've already excluded the people who don't meet that criteria.
But how can I, as a math teacher, have a conversation with a parent that doesn't know anything about math instruction?
Well, one of the ways that I think you can start having one is to figure out what is the problem that each of us see from our own vantage point.
What do you mean by that?
So I'm a school teacher, and my school scores are going very low. I frame the problem as a test scores problem. Mm-hmm. So if I frame it that way as a teacher, well-intentioned as I may be, that the way I framed it means that the solutions have to do with tutoring to get the scores up and so forth. I framed it in a very, very particular way. And I framed it, if I'm a professional learning community, I framed it only with input from people in that community, other teachers. So you have sort of an insularity, you know, people of like mind talking to each other. On the other hand, you take a student who experiences school very different than how a teacher would see it. And you'd say, how do you see this problem? What's going on? And as you know, because you've interviewed and have surveyed and have engaged a lot of students, you know that they have a whole different and valuable way of helping us characterize a school and helping us understand what is that experience as a lived experience. Then you have the parents who are equal stakeholders in this, who view the school from yet another different point of view.
Okay, well, as a parent, I might say, my kid's bored or he wants to drop out or he hates math. That's what I would say. And so what's there in that for you as teacher?
Well, I'm assuming that parent is saying that based on the information they have.
Sure. My kid at home, I see him at night, and I ask him about algebra. He said, I hate algebra.
Right. So what if I ask the parent, what do you think goes on in algebra? What is it that your student or that your child hates about it? And what's at stake if your child doesn't do well in this class and classes to follow?
Well, I don't like that because I want him to finish school. I want him to go to college. But math is too hard.
So what we're doing right now, we've started, is entering into a dialogue about what is the problem. I think for too long, the authority of framing the problem has rested only with the institution. And projects like Bob Moses's algebra project was an example, and that started in Massachusetts and in sort of the Harvard area, where Bob Moses, having been a black civil rights organizer and also a mathematics educator, he was one of the first people in modern times to say, but the school isn't the only one that has an authoritative voice about what our children need in mathematics. Parents also can assume a leading voice in this. And so as a community organizer, he challenged schools to help parents recognize and demand that schools take seriously the fact that in honors classes there were no children of color, for instance, and that they be responsive, that they work together, but that the outcomes be non-negotiable.
And that the response not be, well, a racist response saying those people can never learn. It's in their genes or their culture. He says that's not tenable. What we need to do is a different conversation.
And this is, you know, having a conversation means having words that are meaningful to both parties, to all parties. And myself, when I first started working at IDRA, and I did a lot of work with teachers, and then I started to do more work with parents because that was always part of our model, I learned and I was confronted with my own limited vocabulary for how to say things and explain concepts in ways that were non-specialized.
For example?
So, for instance, when I said engagement, for instance, mm-hmm. you know, that's a word that it means something in a particular discourse. It's an academic discourse. But if I say, are they interested in something? Do they care about this? Are they excited to be here? All those things are easy way to say the same thing for engagement. So it's really changing how we talk about things so that there's, we're, and it's not about talking down. It's about developing a shared language, really, and saying that the conversation, that what's at stake is so important that it's worth building this common language.
So in this engagement, you know, we were talking about a project that you're familiar with that we did last year with a large school. The school was doing poorly in terms of their test scores, and you know, that's a sword hanging over all schools under No Child Left Behind. When the parents came together and started looking at the data, and we had to interpret the data in a way that's understandable, but they still were looking. So one of the things that was clear, the test scores in math are low and they're not increasing at the appropriate rate, therefore they're not achieving annual AYP. And so as the parents and the students looked at it, they hit on several things. One was having to do with students asking questions, and another one was had to do with teachers reteaching in a different way. What has been your experience about things like that, in terms of how you take the data of the school and make it comprehensible and create it into a dialogue or conversation?
Well, so the first thing that, the first flag that I would see is, you know, without the kind of support in guiding those conversations, you can already see that the status quo response from the teacher's perspective or the school's perspective is that these low test scores indicate or index low motivation or some kind of inherent limitation in the student.
The parents don't care.
Right. Because we test at the individual level, we tend to put the onus of the aggregate gap, let's say, directly on the students. Mm-hmm. So right away, what you're suggesting is completely different because you've already assumed that it is not the student who shoulders all the responsibility for the outcomes of those tests. So by asking students, when you need help, does your teacher, can you ask questions? Do you feel free to ask questions in
your
classroom?
Yes, just that alone.
I mean, some of these are, again, it's not any one indicator, but that's a very central one because it kind of gets to the heart of the relationship that's happening in the classroom, the learning relationship that's happening. I see within even the sort of broader reform efforts in mathematics that there's a lot of emphasis on trying to get students to relate to mathematics itself and to have experiences to show how, you know, riding a roller coaster, there's math there, as if the idea were, you know, if we can excite kids enough, we can get them to learn. And I think that that's selling kids very short, because I think kids are intellectuals. Kids like ideas. They like patterns. They like interesting things if presented in an interesting way. But so this idea of when I need help on something, when I don't understand something, how comfortable do I feel in having a voice in my classroom? It signals something very, very deep about the presence or the lack of a true learning relationship in this classroom, for which I don't think the broader education community really even has the words to characterize. Like, what does it mean to analyze the classroom in terms of a learning relationship? And by this, I don't mean just by the affect. I don't mean, is the teacher speak in a calm tone, or does she soothe, have a gentle manner? What I mean is that the core of what's being the transactions that are happening are guided around what the students need to be successful in learning what they're learning.
Well, but also bringing back to the parents is, parents don't know what's going on in the classroom. It's not a matter of criticizing. It's just, what is it like in the classroom? And this was getting a little bit of insight, because some parents were assuming kids can ask a lot of questions and the teacher's trying to explain it in a variety of ways. They just assume that.
Right.
And when the kids were saying, when the students were saying, no, a lot of us, we're afraid to ask a question. The teacher's teaching so fast that we don't want to slow her down. Or when we ask a question, she teaches it again in the same way.
Right.
And then the parents said, really? You know, and it was just that insight. You're getting an insight and then a conversation of what is in fact going on in the classroom.
So I think that speaks to this idea of this common ground that we were talking about earlier. And one of the things that's very hard is to overcome sort of what I would say is our asymmetrical power relationships. That is, who feels more important?
Hold it. Say it again. Asymmetrical power relationships?
So symmetrical would be that both parties feel that they're on equal footing. Asymmetrical means that there is an imbalance between who has authority and who
doesn't have authority.
Well, that asymmetry it seems to be inherent in the teacher-student relationship. The teacher has the power, the student doesn't.
And you know, in addition to the parent, the parents are often put on a lower status, right? So I think one of the next steps in the evolution of the engagement with parents around meaningful reforms would be to have images, guiding images of what exactly are we talking about? When parents are concerned about what's going on in school, what does teaching and practice really look like? What is it? Now, for people who have other means of resources who can take off anytime they want to go visit, you know, their children at school, spend the day with their son or daughter, you know, that's a luxury. For most people, you know, that may not be quite an option. And so the classroom and the daily life in school actually becomes inaccessible to the parents, to them understanding what their child experiences. If that's the case, they'll always speak about it sort of indirectly without firsthand experience. And one of the ways that I think would be a creative use of technology would be for, you know, around these shared conversations around teachers and parents and students included, would be this idea of taking videos from teachers' practice, teachers videotaping themselves, preparing a discussion, and showing to the parents in meetings a piece of instruction that highlights the range of things that happen. When instruction goes great, and when kids are very successful, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. And everyone can share in that. And the teacher, if the relationship is really going to go somewhere, the teacher can also show, here is an example of where the class isn't going the way I would hope. Mm-hmm. And I want to put my practice up so that you know what your child is doing and so that I can get some help about what I need to be doing. So the idea is not that the parents are going to give the teachers teaching strategies. That's not, there's other purposes for that. There's other meetings. But this idea that it's a shared life, it's a shared experience of what the school goes into, of what students experience, and you want to open that up to parents so that they can have a real image and speak with more knowledge about the day-to-day workings of schools and be able to advocate and support their students and support the school in helping the school serve their students.
I think that's very good because on the one hand, the logistics and the threat a high school teacher would feel with the parents sitting in and observing. The kid probably would be uncomfortable too if his mom or dad is sitting in the classroom. But you need to bring the classroom experience to be the center of the conversation. This is what's going on, and also students participating in that conversation.
So this would be a great evolution because currently, like what's done with Family Math, for instance, that's a very big initiative, and they do it in Spanish, and it serves a great purpose. It's out of the Lawrence Hall of Science at Berkeley, and it's a lot of materials and experiences where the parents come in at night and you do things with, you know, paper clips and how to do patterns with paper clips, and parents get a glimpse of the mathematical content. Mm-hmm. But it's in a very different setting than the way their children experience school. So I think in addition to those kinds of things, what we need is a deeper and more penetrating look at day-to-day life in practice, because it opens up the relationship, how open the teachers are, how open the parents are, how open the students are to hearing each other, figuring out what's going on, what do we need to do better. Because it seems to me, and we talked about this earlier, that each of those people have a different perspective on what they would say about that video.
Right.
And I liked about what you said earlier, before our conversation, before the taping here, about preparing all the stakeholders for that conversation, for that shared conversation.
And we're calling this a broader conversation, and that's what it is. It's not a matter of teaching parents how to do math. It's not even a matter of teaching teachers how to teach math. It's about having a conversation, which teachers talk about the context, students do, and parents. And I think an excellent stimulus would be video clips of that, because what we're looking for is dialogue and parity, this peerness there.
And I think the expansion of roles and the sort of overlapping roles would become more real. Because then schools couldn't say, well, what I do, you know, in my classroom is my business. Well, mm-hmm. not exactly. And then parents also couldn't say, well, I just send him to school. I don't know what they do with him.
I don't know what they do.
And the principal can't say, well, I hire the best teachers I can, and I don't have time to see all the teachers, and I don't know what's going on. And or the students can say, I don't know how to ask for help, and I don't like school.
but because there's nowhere to go from there. It's sort of, there's all sort of dead-end conversations. But if you hold one piece up for kind of shared discussion around that, I think it'll improve the relationship. And the reason why you want to improve the relationship is because you want to get strategies and that work for students. In other words, it's not just, okay, now the parents love the school and the school loves the parents and the school. It's not just that. It's for the purpose of more learning for the students, but it's setting the context that learning can happen, the exactly. adjustments that have to happen.
There's something very pragmatic for all parts of the conversation, but certainly for the teacher in terms of how to figure out how to better teach the student.
So the people who serve and work with parents in professional development, especially the math education community, I want to challenge them to rethink and look at how they currently engage with parents and to expand that. It doesn't mean that the family night math and these other things don't have a place. Those are wonderful activities, but I want to challenge us as a math education community to do more thinking around, do we all agree what the problem is? Do
yes.
you see it the way I see it? You know, that very mm-hmm. simple question, do you see what I see and what do you see? This is a very simple guiding question that can propel the advancements that have to happen.
Powerful, powerful. Thank you very much, Jack.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org or fill out the form on our podcast webpage at www.idra.org/podcasts.